through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back into Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps has been giving us some prospects to take a close look at as we inch toward the draft. The Seahawks not going to be on the board until the second round, pick number 56 overall. They've got one pick on day two, the rest of their picks on day three, though I think we are all expecting them to trade back potentially from 56, acquire more picks. That said, Jake has been looking at a few guys that could tempt the Seahawks there, that they could take, that he truly believes would make this squad better, make an immediate impact, and most importantly, actually be available in the second round. Jake isn't taking a look at, like, I don't know, maybe Devonta Smith slides to 56. You know, maybe Waddle slides to 56. You know, maybe Jamar Chase slides to 56. No. These
all
are guys.
All within play.
All within play. Maybe within Trevor Lawrence slides to 56 and you have a bit of a quarterback controversy in Seattle. No. These are guys that are all actually going to be hopefully available somewhere in the second round, potentially late second round. So Jake has isolated today a specific type of wide receiver, Jake, and that is today's Seahawks draft prospect profile on electric small receivers.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Draft profile.
I cannot wait to get into this. We are getting closer and closer to the draft, and so I am going to now combine some of the guys that we're going to highlight in draft profiles, especially in the particular position groups that I think that the Seahawks are really going to target. And I defined this group as electric small receivers. Why?
Right.
Why?
Because I love my
tallest receiver in this group, Stacy, is 5'9.5".
Let's go!
5'9.5" is the tallest out of these four receivers. And you may hear that and you go, ah, Jake,
I
want a big-bodied receiver. I know you want another receiver to add to the all-petite team.
That's absolutely right.
But I think that these four prospects are very, very intriguing, dynamic players that not only can make their hay in the slot and in a variety of different ways, but a lot of these guys can hold their own on the outside as well. So I'm going to get this kicked off with the highest prospect or the most intriguing prospect out of all of these small electric receivers, and that is Purdue receiver Rondale Moore. He is 5'7", 185 pounds, but he is well put together in terms of his body type. Almost kind of looks like a running back in some aspects out there at receiver. But he runs, guys, an unbelievable blazing 40 time of a 4.29, and he had a 42.5-inch vertical and a very explosive player out of Purdue. And if it wasn't for his height, guys, Rondale Moore would be considered one of the top receivers in this draft, no question about it, and still may find himself in the early second round, you know, even given his height, because when the ball is in his hands, he can take it to the house at any given time. Now, Rondale Moore, it's a cool story for me because I was able to coach him back in high school when he was about to go to Purdue as a senior at the Nike opening event, and I had him as one of my receivers. He is an extremely competitive young man. He is a guy who is a yes-sir, no-sir type of mentality, loves to be coached. But I think that what he was able to do at Purdue was special. And I think that he's got a real chance coming into the NFL to be one of those dynamic guys. And I think within this system for Shane Waldron, they can use him as a gadget guy in the fly sweep game. He can break the top off of a defense with his speed. And I think to complement DK and Tyler Lockett, he can be used inside, outside. He can truly be a chess piece that would be fun to use for offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. Next guy that I'm going to get to. This would be, if the Seahawks made this pick, DK Metcalf would probably just tear his shirt off in half on the spot in the moment. He would be so fired up. That is receiver Elijah Moore out of Ole Miss. Now, Elijah Moore is 5'9.5", around 180 pounds. He ran a 4.35, blazing speed. Now, Elijah Moore is, to me, one of the more smooth, complete receivers in this draft in terms of his route running ability, his understanding of space, and his ability to create separation at the top of his route. He is really a well-rounded receiver in terms of his route running ability. I think that he might have the easiest transition into the NFL out of any of these receivers that I'm going to list off. So I don't know if Elijah Moore will be there at pick number 56, but if he slides, if teams make the mistake of passing up Elijah Moore, the Seahawks cannot pass this young man up. I would be furious if Elijah Moore was still on the board and the Seahawks did not select him. I think he would be dynamic and electric in the slot, on the outside, complementing, reuniting with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. It would be incredible to be able to have somebody like Elijah Moore. Now, I've seen him go as high as, you know, the late first round, and I've seen other places where they really are knocking his size, and he could be a mid to late second round pick. Okay, the next one. This one is probably the most fun story out of all these guys, Stacy. Dwayne Eskridge out of Western Michigan, 5'9", 190 pounds. He runs a 4.35 40, and the reason why he is such a fun story is because it is, I mean, you talk about success not being a linear path. Man, Dwayne Eskridge, he changed multiple positions. Coming out of high school, he was a running back, switched over to receiver as a track guy. They wanted to use his speed out on the outside, out on the edge, and he spent his first two seasons as a receiver. NFL scouts and just advisors around said, hey, we'd love to see Eskridge as a corner, and he kind of took that into mind, and eventually the coaching staff thought that it might be a good transition for him to play on the defensive side of the ball, given the fact that he's only 5'9". And his year that he was going to play corner, he started out in his first four games, played extremely well, and unfortunately got hurt. And the odd thing is the following year in 2020, he came back and played receiver and was absolutely fantastic. One of the other things that Dwayne Eskridge brings to the table is he's a kick returner. He's a specialist. He's a kick returner, punt returner, and a very darn good one at that. One of the more one of the better returners in the game. So when you talk about Dwayne Eskridge, and if you think back to Tyler Lockett and what he brought to the table, right out of the gate, Tyler Lockett didn't make it in this league by being a number one type of receiver. He was a number three receiver, but a Pro Bowl specialist. And so you could potentially get that back with a guy like Dwayne Eskridge. He is explosive with his first step. He is tough. He's physical. Even at his size, I really, really like Dwayne Eskridge a lot, and I think he would make a lot of sense. And I think there's a pretty strong guarantee that he would be around in the second and third round of the draft where the Seahawks would be selecting. Now, my last one is probably the guy that's going to fall the farthest out of any of these, Stacy, but the one that I think could be a massive, massive steal, and that is Amari Rodgers out of Clemson. 5'9.5", 210 pounds. He is built like a running back, but plays like a receiver. His dad is T. Martin, former Tennessee and NFL quarterback, and so he has a background of the NFL. He was another kid that I had the chance to coach at the Nike opening, Stacy, and when he was on my team that year, all we did was throw Amari Rodgers the ball. And we had T. Higgins, who ended up being a first-round pick for the Cincinnati Bengals. This kid is, he has it all together. He is he's a great young man. He is got it all together, really understands route running. And the thing I really like about him is he is a big run-after-catch guy. And I think that when you have a guy like Amari Rodgers, I think that you can use him all over the place, and he could be a Deebo Samuel type of receiver for you here in Seattle. So these four electric receivers, Stacy, they're undersized, but they are fast. They can play ball with the best of them. And they are guys that can get it done, not just with their route running and from a traditional receiver standpoint, but these guys all have the ability to make big plays when the ball is in their hands at any given point.
I've been taking some notes here, Jake. So I'm going to start with my first question here. What is the single most important quality that any wide receiver drafted by Seattle have if it's a guy drafted this year to be brought in? So we're talking like present offense. What's the most important quality the Seahawks are going to be looking for?
Well, the most important quality to me is this guy doesn't need to come in and be the number one receiver. He needs to come in and be a complement. And I think that's the luxury for the Seahawks in this draft is when you're sitting there at second, maybe you trade back and you're in the third round, you need a complement. And I think that when you look at Rondale Moore and Elijah Moore, I think they are very good, polished receivers that can get it done and be extremely dynamic. Like I said, I think they would be home runs. If they didn't make the selection at 56, I would be furious because it would be such a great pick for them. But guys like Dwayne Eskridge and Amari Rodgers, I think would be great pickups because I think they would be able to replace that production that David Moore brought to the table, and even more so as a guy that can do a lot of damage with the ball in their hands. Use them in receiver screens. Use them in fly sweeps. And guess what? This Rams offense with Shane Waldron that he's bringing here to Seattle uses that type of system. They just bring so much versatility to the table that I think it makes them a true weapon and a chess piece to complement what DK and Tyler do. So I think that these four guys, Dwayne Eskridge, Amari Rodgers, those two are probably the most likely of the small electric receivers that would be around for the Seahawks. But I would not be surprised if you had any one of those four players slide down to the Seahawks, and it would be a tremendous opportunity to get them.
Now, you profiled these four guys because you like all four of them. There are some shared qualities among all four of them. You think all four could be a fit for the offense, and you think all four could, this is most important, be available at pick 56 overall potentially. Which of the four, personally, say that all four are available, would you prefer the Seahawks take? And I know you love all of them. Which would you maybe most take if you're John Schneider on that day?
Out of any of these four?
All four.
Out of all four, give me Elijah Moore.
Okay.
Elijah Moore all day, every day. I think that he is an NFL starter from day one. I don't think that he's a guy that is, you know, a third receiver in this league. If you had Elijah Moore as your third receiver, I mean, you should be competing to be the number one offense in the league. That would be the most exciting proposition out there for the Seahawks. And it really would be one of those situations where it'd be pick your poison. And you couldn't, if you were Russell Wilson at that point, you had Elijah Moore, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Gerald Everett, and crew, you couldn't complain about the weaponry that you have. I mean, you're already in a pretty good spot, but you would definitely be of the envy of everyone else in the NFL. So I think all four of these guys would be great pickups, but Elijah Moore would be the biggest steal in this draft for the Seahawks. And like I said before, DK Metcalf would lose his mind. They are very, very close. It's not just the excitement of having somebody from Ole Miss, but Elijah Moore and DK Metcalf are very, very good friends.
Now, I ask because of this. I love making difficult decisions for you guys. I love, you know, these kinds of games. This isn't a game, but think of it like you have to pick one. That's basically the game that I'm making right now. You've profiled, I don't even know how many guys so far, getting us all ready for the draft. Awesome work, by the way, Jake. So this is my last question here. I have identified, I think, three guys that you've made it clear you would love to see on this team at three different positions, and all three are their greatest position of need. So let's say we get to 56, okay? You're going to have four options here. We get to 56, Seahawks are on the board, the clock starts. These three players are available. Cornerback, Tyson Campbell. OL, Quinn Meinerz. Wide receiver, Elijah Moore. Or you trade back. Which of those four options do you do, Jake?
Oh, Stacey,
I know. Oh, it's so fun.
Because I want Quinn Meinerz so bad.
I know
I think it would make the offensive line so good.
and set up for the next few years down the road. Oh,
but
man.
Then you can get Elijah Moore. You can have kind of an embarrassment of riches with your pass game. You could get Campbell at your weakest position on your team, and you can lock down a corner for the next couple years on a rookie deal. Or you could trade back and get more than just your three picks, and 56 is going to net you more than any of your other picks if you trade back. Oh, what a fun decision you have to make here that I don't.
I think that this would be a decision between Meinerts and Elijah Moore. The reason why I wouldn't say Tyson Campbell is because truly this cornerback draft is filled with guys that I think are going to be in the later rounds that fit the size profile that the Seahawks truly love and want. And so I think that they can find a really good player in the corner draft, and we'll profile those guys tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But these two guys right here are guys that you would never get a crack at, even if you traded down late. And I would probably have to go with Elijah Moore, because I think that you got such a unique talent there at the receiver position. But you know what? I changed my mind. I'm going with Quinn Meinerts. So let's get to the
trenches. You've already written his name on the card.
No. I changed at the last second. Quinn Meinerts would be my pick, just because you would have, if you think about it, Stacey, Quinn Meinerts, Gabe Jackson, Damian Lewis, the interior of your offensive line would be set for the mm-hmm. next 3 to 4 years. And that would be extremely important when you're talking about a division that has put a premium on trying to stop Russell Wilson with pass rush. And so I think that that would be a tremendous job by John Schneider and Pete Carroll to be able to solidify that aspect. But, man, it would be really, really hard to not pick Elijah Moore.
And you, Jake, have been doing a tremendous job with these profiles. Awesome one again today, profiling three smaller electric wide receivers, potential picks for the Seahawks at 56 right there. If you miss any of these, check it out on Hour 3. Kicks off Hour 3 of the Jake and Stacey podcast on 710sports.com. Go to the podcast page or download it wherever you get your podcasts. Time for NFL headlines. Justin Fields revealed on Wednesday that he was diagnosed with epilepsy in his youth. Now, sources have told NFL Network's Tom Pelissero and Ian Rappaport that some NFL medical staffs have wondered if a concussion then could put Fields at greater risk of seizures. I think that this is a very fair fear to have, although Justin Fields' talent alone makes it worth the risk. And obviously, he would have to be cleared, right? Justin Fields cares about his own future, his own medical future, his own health. So he's going to want to mm-hmm. make absolutely sure that this is something he can do.
It is. It absolutely is. And knowing Justin Fields, this is something that he has lived and dreamed for his entire life. I don't think that this is going to deter him from playing in the NFL. And, you know, one of the things that I think with Justin Fields' situation in terms of his diagnosis with epilepsy, as you mentioned, it gives him a greater risk for concussion. But generally, when you talk about seizures, and I only know this because I had a teammate that actually was diagnosed with epilepsy, is that it is manageable. It is a condition that is manageable in terms of what you're putting into your body and those types of things. So it is scary to get a diagnosis like that, but I'm hopeful for Justin Fields that this is not going to derail his career, and I think that he's going to go on and have a very successful one if put in the right situation.
I was actually going to ask if you knew anyone, because while it's not exceptionally common, he can't be the only player to ever have been diagnosed with epilepsy and then enter into the NFL. There's been thousands and thousands of players, and this is epilepsy is something that I feel like someone else would have had.
Yeah, I'm going back into the time machine, but my sophomore year in high school, our first game, we were playing Bellevue High School. It was the biggest game in the state. Skyline versus Bellevue. We won an amazing game 6-0, and one of our captains, our star linebacker, Eric Bieje, later on that night had an epileptic episode, and he didn't even know he had it.
Wow.
And so it was a very traumatic experience for all of us, but he was able to manage it and continue to keep playing and have an unbelievable season and year. So with that background and that seeing somebody else do it, I know that obviously at a much higher level with NFL doctors and the ability that Fields will be able to have to surround himself with the best, to help him manage this situation, and I think this is a condition he can definitely play through.
All right, we've got a couple new NFL rule changes for 2021. Now, the two of you and listeners already know about the jersey number changes. Congratulations to you guys. We had some jersey number discourse. The two of you are passionate jersey number fans, and I'm so happy for you, but there's some other ones we have to talk about here. So I'm just going to read through them, then we'll go back and look. One, owners have rejected a proposal for a full-time sky judge. A second one, they've eliminated overtime in preseason games. Thank goodness. Third, they've approved a one-year experiment in an attempt to make it easier to recover onside kicks. I'll get some details for you guys on that in just a second if you want them. And four, they've made taunting. I hate this one. They've made taunting a point of emphasis in 2021. So as you guys know, pretty much every year the NFL will have a point of emphasis when it comes to penalties. They've made holding a point of emphasis, defensive pass interference. Gosh, I'm just thinking of just the last couple years. They've had a couple different points of emphasis for each year that they go in. Taunting, this year's point of emphasis. Not a fan of this. I do not feel like this is the most important thing that you need to eliminate from your game or moderate in your game. And I also don't want to see, I agree with Danny O'Neill, I don't want to see a single game decided because of a taunting penalty.
Now, Stacey, I will answer, get into this, but I do want to report we have breaking Seahawks news.
Oh.
Atfield Yates saying that the Seahawks have re-signed quarterback Geno Smith.
There you go.
And so he is now back in the mix for a quarterback position battle there, Danny Etling, and you've got Alex Magoo there as well right now. So I wonder if they'll end up keeping four quarterbacks on the roster or not. But any of those that were wondering if the Seahawks would take a quarterback in this draft, you can write that one off the table at this point. And I don't think it would have been smart for them to do it at this stage right now, just given the fact that they only have three picks. And I think they could be used in better situations that would have better impact for them this year. They need a couple position needs this season, and they could use all the help they can get. So Geno Smith back in the mix at backup quarterback.
Good to know. I think that's a really good move. I mean, the best thing that Seattle has had going for it, knock on wood, just so everyone knows that I'm doing it, is Russell Wilson has never missed a game, and his health and his availability has been one of his greatest strengths. And so they have been lucky to avoid any real investments in the backup quarterback there. That said, Geno Smith was a pretty nice addition here. He seemed to be a great supportive teammate. Let's not forget, also great with that coin toss, dominant coin toss caller. I'm very fine with this move. I'm very okay with it. I, if I had to guess, would have predicted Smith was coming back over someone like Gardner Minshew. I know some people were really hoping that that would be a move the Seahawks could make. Obviously a local guy that people love, former Coug, but I'm very okay with Smith coming back here, Jake.
I am as well. Now, to transition back into
the
rule changes and the taunting rule, I'm all for it when it comes to just obvious taunting, like straight up obvious taunting, getting in someone's face, standing over them, you know, those types of things really stand out to me as taunting. But in terms of just having fun, in terms of just talking a little trash or, you know, flexing on somebody as they're standing next to you or pointing the first down, or even if they're 10, 20 yards away and somebody's holding up the peace sign, you know, saying, I'm out of here. I don't see that as a flag. I don't see that as overwhelming taunting where it's a personal foul. I just hope that with the NFL, what they do, what I hope they don't do is they take away the personality of the players, of the game, and the passion that is there. That's not what this rule should be for, and it's not, I don't think that they should overdo this one, but I'm fearful that they will.
Got a couple questions here on the text line. One from the 509, do you think the sky judge idea got vetoed because the owners didn't want to pay another official? I think it's a fair question. I don't know why the sky judge isn't more embraced. Now, I do remember, and we'll have to get into this either tomorrow or later this week, going a little bit of a deeper dive into these rules, but 509, the league also made an expansion into allowing when officials can confer with other officials about decisions to make, and I do think the NFL would prefer that there not be one judge or that could just overrule everything. I think they want officials to be able to confer with each other. And then also I've got some details on the onside kick. But before we get to any of that, we as promised, we'll get back into two stories from the timeline. One, Cliff Kingsbury, a little bit jealous of some NFC West coaches. Another one, Sound from Portland State's new hoops coach, men's hoops coach. I cannot stress this enough. You want to hear it. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Hey, sports fans! Curtis has been
waiting. Hey, sports fans!
Hey, sports fans. You guys, there was two stories I didn't get to with the timeline that I really, really want to get to because they're both somewhat local, and they are hilarious. So let's start with this one. Portland State basketball, men's basketball, has a new coach. He is 37-year-old Jace Coburn. First of all, congratulations. That is an exceptionally impressive accomplishment at such a young age. Wishing him nothing but the best with the Vikings. But can we talk about his press conference, introductory press conference?
Let's.
Take a listen first.
The other thing is I'm hungry and passionate. I don't eat breakfast in the morning so I can come to work hungry. So when I get to lunch, I'm hungry. And that's just the kind of person I am. I know my 2003 Chevy Tahoe's got a lot of play this week so far, but, like, it doesn't have AC, and it doesn't have heat. And the reason I do that is so I can practice my mental toughness during the winter when it's cold, and I can practice my mental toughness during the summer when it's hot. That's the type of person I am.
And I don't wear shoes outside in the wintertime. And you know why I do that? Because of grit. Because it helps me sharpen. Iron sharpens iron, Curtis.
And I want my landlord to charge me more per month in rent because I need to grind for mine.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Now, obviously, this is all in good fun. It's really just, it's the exact same thing people were making fun of Dan Campbell for. It's just, you go in thinking it's going to be like, hey, guys, really excited to be here. And then it's like, wow, this guy had 17 Mountain Dew energy drinks for breakfast. Actually, no, never mind. He had nothing. He had nothing for breakfast. Jace, that is awful for your metabolism. Appreciate the dedication, my friend, but oh my God, I was laughing out loud during this entire thing. Jake's turning bright red.
How did you go through that? Because you know he probably didn't just write this himself, and if he did, he needed to run it by somebody.
No.
Because in your head, it sounded really, really cool and really inspiring. And that's a problem. That's a problem if you thought that, man, my players are going to hear this and they're going to go, wow, this guy is going to turn my career around. This guy is going to take us to the promised land. Because this guy is so incredibly tough, Stacey. You want to know how tough this guy is? Not only does he show up hungry to lunch every day because he doesn't eat his breakfast, but he doesn't have AC in his car and isn't going to change it because he wants to mentally condition himself in the elements. This guy is the real deal. And it doesn't sound, Stacey, to me, like as we listen to it further, it doesn't sound like inspiration. It just sounds like you're like not being practical.
Well, let's be real. Coach speak is most of the time
no
kind of
AC.
Dumb.
Coach no speak AC is in the summer.
No heat in the winter. No, because you got to test your body. You got to have grit. You got to be strong. You got to know when to power through. And that's what Jace is doing, man.
Here's a legit question I have for you about this.
Yeah.
So he's kind of bragging about the fact that he doesn't have heat in the winter. Is he dressing up? Is he putting on extra layers in the car? Is he trying to cheat the system? Do you think he's cheating the system here? Or do you think because this matters. If he wears his straight-up suit that he's going to work with, then I have bad respect. But if he's trying to cheat the system and he's all parked up and everything in the car.
If he's about it, he needs to wear a tank top in the wintertime and a parka in the summertime. You know what I kind of like about it?
Oh my gosh.
Basically, this is the life of every college student, and I'm realizing this is how I should have been spinning things when I was in college. Rather than feeling bad that I was like broke and didn't have a nice car, it should have been like, no, You know why I didn't eat breakfast? It's not because I didn't have any more money on my food card.
I'm hungry.
It's because I want to stay hungry for knowledge. Because I eat books and words and not food. And you know why I let my 2000 Pontiac leak and fill with water and then scoop out water with a solo cup I keep in my car? For arm strength. Because I need that workout every morning. Because I need to sharpen that grit. That's what I should have been
doing. And I feel sorry for those Vikings players on 6 a.m. workouts. Because your coach has not eaten in like 12 hours.
He's so angry and grumpy.
Yeah.
Last one here. Cliff Kingsbury. Now, he is one to talk when it comes to draft setups. We all remember last year, Cliff looking like Ryan Gosling's character from Crazy Stupid Love in this like living room that looks like it's made entirely out of stone and cement, sitting in front of the TV in a barely furnished room with loafers where he was absolutely not wearing socks underneath, watching the draft. Mm-hmm. He is talking about how McVay is going to be doing things, cut number 8.
I really think it's just a ploy by McVay to allow himself the opportunity to take his shirt off again and jump in the pool like he did on Hard Knocks. Probably sip a little rosé, dip in the ocean, and make some draft picks. So I think more than anything, he had that up. So it should be fun to watch.
Is this trash talking, or is this just kind of good fun?
No, I think this is good fun. It's good fun. They're friends. I mean, they're friends. They know each other very well. But I would respond and say it takes one to know one. I mean, Sean McVay, he might look for any opportunity to take his shirt off. I'm sure Cliff Kingsbury is the same way. You know, notice the drink selection. He said rosé.
Which is delicious and refreshing.
Which, you know, is a high classy, you know, alcoholic beverage from what I've been told. I don't drink, so I really don't know. But
you seem like a rosé guy,
sounds
Jake.
Nice. It sounds nice. I mean, you know, a lot classier than the average person. So, you know, I think Cliff Kingsbury, Stacey, I think he feels threatened. I think that's why he's taking a shot over the bow. He's like, no. The cool draft setup is my thing, Sean. So like, stay away from my thing.
Cliff is like, I'm the hot coach in the NFC West. Not you, not Kyle, not Pete.
And you know what, Pete?
Sean McVay.
And Pete's sitting there going, no, guys. That is 100% me. That's me.
Oh,
I've had this division on lock. I've been dealing with Bruce Arians and Jim Harbaugh. I have by far been the best-looking coach in this division. You young bucks can't take it away from me.
I liked Curtis. Why are there only hot coaches in the NFC West?
There's so many hot coaches in the NFC West.
Why can't I be in the AFC East? All right, what I need to know coming up next. You guys already know how it works, but here's a quick reminder. Send any and all questions you have. Text them right now to 710-710. We will answer them right around the corner on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
What I Need to Know, brought to you by Allred Heating, Cooling, Electric. Send your questions in, 710-710. First one here about the Mariners, which gives me a chance to tell you guys that Ty France is back in the lineup today in that series opener against the Red Sox.
Let's go! Ty France!
All right, so here is the question. This from Chris and Enumclaw. What I need to know, there are 9 games left in the month for the Mariners. They're 11-7 now. Do they finish April with a winning record? Chris reminds us they've got 4 against Boston, 4 against Houston, and then 1 against the Angels to finish the month before they jump into the next month, obviously, not just 1 game.
Mm-hmm. I am going to say yes, they do. They do finish the month over 500. I think that the way that their bullpen has been pitching has been stellar. And then if Kyle Lewis can find his footing early on, I think that that helps tremendously. And I'm not going to put the world of expectations on him because I think it's going to take a few at-bats for him to really, truly be comfortable. But if he could have a hot start, mm-hmm. I think that would be very helpful because now you've just truly lengthened your lineup in having Haniger, Ty France healthy, Kyle Lewis. You put Seager at cleanup. I just think it makes everybody's job that much easier if Kyle Lewis is able to get off to a hot start. So if that is the case, I do think that they finish above 500.
If they do finish above 500 in this month, the absolute worst they can go over these next 9 games is 3-6. I think there are three wins to be had, at least, over these next nine games against Boston. And against the Houston team you just took a series from, and the Astros have lost 9 of 10. So I think the Mariners will be above 500 at the end of this month.
I think they can be pushing 500. Here's the thing. If they aren't above 500, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, because I think that the Red Sox are, I don't know if they're just as good as their start. They're 12-6, first place in the AL East right now. But they're averaging more runs per game than the Dodgers. So they have a bit more offense than I think people are giving them credit for. Martinez has been phenomenal, OPS over 1,000. I think that if they continue to just take a series or split a series, hover around 500, I think that would be excellent. So it sounds like a dig, but I definitely don't mean it as one. Five Guys Fries or McDonald's Fries?
McDonald's Fries.
I've never had Five Guys Fries, so I feel unfair saying this, but McDonald's Fries.
You could buy probably about five or six different orders of McDonald's Fries for the same price as Five Guys Fries.
But are they as good or better?
I mean, Five Guys Fries are incredible.
Can you describe them?
They just put them into like a brown paper bag, and like you can get them with Cajun seasoning on them too. They just basically pour it on and
shake it up. Are they thin and crispy? Are they thicker?
No, they're pretty thick. You get like a whole brown paper bag full of them.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're very, very good. But I'm going to pick McDonald's. You talk about cost, and also McDonald's fries are just, they're the OG of great fries. So you can never go wrong with McDonald's fries, in my opinion.
All right. Oh, this person, two non-fans of Five Guys, so two votes for McDonald's. Wow, this is heating up the text line right now. 425, need to know, mainly a question for Miss Stacy. However, her inferior, athletically inclined counterparts may contribute. If I'm swimming in the ocean and a shark starts tracking me down, what stroke should I use to get away? Butterfly, breaststroke, or dog paddle? You know, butterfly is the hardest of these three strokes, but also the fastest. So if you know how to do a fly, do that. Breaststroke is the slowest. But it depends, you know, if you're tall, long arms, you can probably get away with doing a breaststroke too. Dog paddle's dangerous, my friend. That'll slow you down real quick.
Well, I don't know. It's been trusty for me over the years. you know, I can do a mean dog paddle. If you're swimming away from a shark, are you even using a particular technique?
Like screaming.
I don't know what I'd be doing, but my body would just be flailing. And maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe I would get eaten, but I just feel like it would be whatever it takes. It takes what it takes to get away, man. Just put your head down and go to work.
Next question here. Let me get my little list. What I need to know, have you ever gotten into a heated argument about how to load a dishwasher? Yes. No, actually, I haven't, but there is a right and wrong way.
Well, I haven't gotten into a heated argument, but I definitely have had my dish stacking prowess questioned by my better half. I mean,
yeah, I have too, Curtis, and yeah. I'm not entirely sure why or what the critique was at that moment, but I've definitely had Brooke, you know, I'm loading the dishwasher and she, you know, walks by and goes, "That's how you're doing it?" Like, yeah, like that's how I'm doing it. I'm putting it in like any normal person would. Like, what am I doing that's so wrong that deserves the critique? I don't understand. But clearly, Curtis, we just don't know. We don't get it.
Apparently not.
509 says, let's give a big shout out to the women's U of W, OUW volleyball team today. Oh, yeah, as they play Kentucky in the Final Four in Omaha.
Yeah,
thanks,
big match.
From Pickleball Rick.
Appreciate it, Pickleball Rick.
Shout out, dogs. Let's go. What time is that? I just had the schedule up literally a second ago. 4 p.m. 4 p.m. All right. Let's see. Oh, I had another one here. What I need to know. If no Alden Smith this year, then are there any prospects in the draft? Have you profiled a couple defensive ends? Is there one that
we
comes
have
to
not
mind?
Yet? I will profile. Just calm down.
No,
everyone.
Jake, we need it now.
I will do it, but
the reality is that they're not gonna take a defensive end with their first pick. I think that if Alden Smith does not pan out, there are plenty of other options that are out there in terms of free agency, and I think that is the direction in which they would go. Yesterday, I listed off a couple names for you. Ryan Kerrigan, Justin Houston is out there, and Melvin Ingram is also out there as well still. Those three guys, I believe, would be great fits here in Seattle as well if Smith was no longer on the roster. So there's not many impact players at the defensive end position that I think the Seahawks would jump all over.
Someone told us that we're supposed to punch a shark in the nose.
I believe so. I think yes. That is the technique.
Shark in the nose? What startled. If it slips and goes in their mouth and then it drags you under and bites off your arm and you die?
That sounds like a you
then,
problem.
Yeah,
not
then
my
you're
problem.
Dead. You got to have precision accuracy. But the other thing that I've always thought about that is, how do you generate enough force through the water to be able to hit a shark hard enough that makes them flee away?
That's what I'm saying.
That's kind of tough. I mean, I don't care how strong you are. That's a tough thing to do.
Do they have nose holes? Sharks?
Well, I mean, they've got gills.
Why? Why would that matter?
I feel like in cartoons they have nose holes. Well, if you shove your fingers in their nose holes, I feel like that could do something. I swear to God, sharks have nose holes. Tell me I'm wrong. I see it all the time. I see it all the time in cartoon drawings and mascots of sharks. They have nose holes.
In a desperate time, you're going to pick the shark's nose.
I'm not going to pick his nose. I'm going to shove my fingers in his nose holes.
Yeah, you're going to pick his nose.
Poor shark.
I'm just saying, you tried to attack me, and that's what you get, little shark. All right, that'll do it for us today. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming up next, and then you've got the Mariners opening a series against the Red Sox. This has been Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle.